Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. It is good to get together again to explore facts provided by Zoom technology and word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarba. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz. How is life on your Prairie Winds farm?
Well, it's a little blustery out there. There are some grassland birds like your meadowlarks and such that are trying to adapt to this, and they're going, what's happening to spring?
And I've still got the juncos.
There you go. So do I.
Still hanging in there. They must know that it's cold up north.
They know something we don't.
There is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, this 8th day of April 2022. And the 44th day of the war in Ukraine.
The weather forecast is cloudy with a brisk and chilly wind today, and it's going to reach a high of about 42. Warmer and sunshiny over the weekend, when temperatures should rise to 62 degrees by Sunday. There's still rain in the forecast for the start of the next week, so that's better than snow, thank you. Let's welcome Dennis Hart with the news summary of the week's news from the pages of our local newspaper.
Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames receives recognition. The city's fire department has a new deputy chief. And a third grader's letter prompts fast city action, all part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds joined members of state law enforcement agencies at Camp Dodge in Johnston, where they packed up and shipped boxes of helmets, vests and ballistic shields to be used by soldiers in Ukraine. The equipment included 146 protective helmets and 714 ballistic vests. The equipment was donated by the Iowa State Patrol and by 18 local law enforcement agencies around the state, including Des Moines, West Des Moines, Windsor Heights, and Norwalk. The trip also reported that businesses and individuals around Ames had been organizing grassroots efforts to support people in Ukraine. In several instances, that's meant baking sweets, and more batches of goodies from bakers will be on the way. Recently, more than a dozen people had a bake sale in Ames, where 176 people offered freewill donations for cakes, cookies, pies, strudel, brownies, apple bars, and other treats, raising $5,000 from a five-hour sale out of a garage. And other people and businesses in Ames have chipped in as well. The Trib also had word that the number of people hospitalized with the coronavirus in Iowa had gone up from the previous week for the first time in 10 weeks, but it remained low. The number hospitalized with the virus last week was 74, up from 67 the week before. But new reported cases continued to decline. There were 478 new coronavirus cases last week, making it the third fewest new reported cases in a week since April of 2020. There were also fewer virus-related deaths, 43 last week, the first time there have been fewer than 50 coronavirus deaths in 1 week since September of last year. Saturday's Trib reported that a medical journal had named Mary Greeley Hospital's laboratory in Ames Lab of the Year. The Medical Laboratory Observer wrote that Mary Greeley's lab stands out because of the depth and variety of initiatives undertaken by both staff members and managers during the coronavirus pandemic. The lab was processing 10,000 to 15,000 coronavirus tests a month during the pandemic. There was also a report that the Iowa State Senate had passed one of Governor Reynolds' key education priorities, a bill to give families taxpayer-funded scholarships to pay for private school expenses. Democrats are opposed and say the measure will harm public schools. The Trib also had word that two major economic development organizations in Ames and Boone County are partnering for the benefit of both business communities. The Ames Economic Development Commission and the Boone County Economic Growth Corporation have entered into a contract for services. On behalf of the Boone Agency, the Ames organization will provide economic and community development services to the city of Boone and also to Madrid, Ogden, and the unincorporated areas of Boone County. And the Trib reported that a Boone author had published her fourth romance novel. Shannon Bruno writes contemporary romance novels that show the complexities and messiness of relationships. Her latest book is called Feel Me in Your Bones, and it comes with a trigger warning because of certain passages in the book involving trauma, drug use, stalking, and other adult themes. Sunday's Tribune reported that Story County political candidates had filed their paperwork, and we know who will be on the ballot for the upcoming primary election in June. And virtually all the seats up for election will see unopposed candidates running, but not the Story County Board of Supervisors. The board has two seats up this year, and three candidates are running. They include Democratic Party incumbents Linda Merkin and Lisa Heddens, both running for re-election. In addition, Republican James Wright Jr., who is a Story County farmer near Collins, is making his first run for the supervisors. The Trib also reported that an Ames family is opening its properties overseas to help Ukrainian refugees. Michelle Kelso and her family have opened the doors to their apartments and an office in Bucharest, the capital of Romania, and they have collected more than $7,700 for two trips to deliver supplies to a hospital near the Ukrainian port city of Odessa. Kelso splits her time between Washington, D.C. and Ames, where she and her husband settled 4 years ago so their daughter could start high school here and get to know her Iowa family more. Michelle Kelso grew up in Ames and attended Ames High. There was also word that the Ames Fire Department has promoted a 23-year veteran of the department to the position of Deputy Fire Chief. Karen Tapper will replace Deputy Fire Chief Doug Allen, who has retired after more than 20 years of service. She will start her new position April 16th. The fire department has 59 firefighters spread across three stations. Two deputy fire chiefs lead the department under Chief Rich Higgins. Tapper will join Deputy Fire Chief Tom Hackett, who was promoted to that position in 2018. And the Trib reported that the Iowa-based pork producer AMVC plans to build a facility that will produce 400,000 tons of swine feed each year. The Audubon Company will build the mill in Hamlin, a town of fewer than 200 people in west-central Iowa. AMVC is the ninth biggest pork producer in the United States. The mill will be located near an existing Landis Cooperative grain facility, and Landis will provide the grain for the new mill. Tuesday's paper reported that the Ames City Council was set to hear 29 action steps that needed to be taken to achieve the city's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The city's consultant, the group Sustainability Solutions, was set to present those steps to the council. The council's aim is to cut community-wide emissions by 83% by the year 2030 and achieve net zero emissions by the year 2050. The Trib also reported on Bruce Rastetter, the Iowa agricultural heavyweight, who is the force behind a proposed $4.5 billion carbon capture pipeline. He says the project could spark a renaissance for the renewable fuel industry. He's proposing the construction of a 2,600-mile pipeline across Iowa and four other Midwestern states that he says will make it possible to cut carbon emissions from nearly three dozen ethanol plants, thus keeping renewable fuel competitive. The pipeline would capture carbon dioxide emissions from the plants, liquefy the gas under pressure, and transport it through the pipeline to North Dakota, where it would be sequestered a mile underground. It's the biggest of three such proposed projects, and it's the farthest along. But critics say it's the wrong approach to a problem that demands wind and solar-based solutions. And one more note from Tuesday's paper, a report from the World Health Organization that says 99% of the world's people breathe air that is often filled with damaging particles that can penetrate deep into the lungs, enter veins and arteries, and cause disease. Wednesday's paper reported that an audio crosswalk had been installed at the intersection of Mortenson Road and South Dakota Avenue in Ames that will notify sight-impaired users when the lights change and how much time they have to cross. And credit for that installation goes to Edwards Elementary School third grader Ben Smith, whose father is blind and who walks across that intersection each day to pick Ben up from school. Ben wrote a letter to the city of Ames, and the city responded immediately. Ames traffic supervisor Brad Becker said the letter came at a perfect time, because the city had accessibility money that had not yet been allocated. The intersection at Mortenson in South Dakota was not yet on the city's list of needed accessibility improvements, but Ben's letter put it at the top. The Trib also reported that Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller and his Kansas counterpart have joined congressional leaders, farmers, and biofuel groups to ask the Biden administration to lift the summer ban on gasoline with higher ethanol blends as part of an effort to lower fuel prices. The letter was sent to the Environmental Protection Agency, asking that agency to use its emergency powers under the Clean Air Act to allow the summertime sale of gasoline with 15% ethanol, called E15. Almost all gasoline in the United States contains 10% ethanol, but access to E15 is curtailed annually in some states from June 1st to September 15th, because the higher blend is thought to contribute to smog in the summer months. Iowa leads the nation in ethanol production and growing the corn that's used to make it. Gasoline prices in the nation have gone up after the U.S. and its allies imposed sanctions on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Yesterday's Trib reported on a lawsuit filed by the former food service director for the Nevada School District. David Schmitz was fired 3 years ago, a decision the district says was due to budget concerns. The district said Schmitz had failed to make promised improvements to his balance sheet and that the food service finished the 2017-2018 school year $100,000 in the red. And after he was fired, both local officials and the state auditor's office received anonymous tips that Schmitz had stolen food from district freezers. But Schmitz has filed a lawsuit against the Nevada District and Superintendent Steve Gray, claiming he was wrongfully terminated and was a victim of whistleblower retaliation and defamation. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had heard about the reality of what it takes to achieve its emissions targets, drastic changes to infrastructure, and the culture of the community. The consultant group Sustainability Solutions told the council earlier this week that, among other things, the city would need to create new renewable power sources and that all light and medium-duty vehicles sold would have to be zero emission by the year 2030. And there was word that the literacy organization Raising Readers in Story County now has a storefront in the North Grand Mall in Ames. Volunteers and board members will staff the front door of the storefront so the location can be open from noon to 4 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, sauntering out of here now and into the weekend, but planning to saunter right back here onto Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have news from all around Iowa. And I'm inviting you to come back as well. In the meantime, we've got the weekend ahead, so let's both go out and make it a safe, healthy, and happy one.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News. And yes, have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend. And the music interlude was Catfish Muse by R. Carlos Nakai. Let's welcome Stephanie Shepherd to Local Talk. Stephanie is a biologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Diversity Program. And let's learn more about prairie chickens to southern Iowa and a prairie chicken gathering tomorrow at dawn near Kellerton, Iowa.
You are the wildlife diversity biologist that's in charge of not only prairie chickens, but frogs and toads and eagles and butterflies and anything else that kind of piques people's interests, I guess, here in Iowa.
Yeah, I am lucky enough to get to work with a lot of diverse species, as all of us do in the Wildlife Diversity Program. So it's an apt name for our program, I guess.
And you've been overseeing the prairie chicken work in southern Iowa.
Yes, we've been working on trying to see if we can support a sustainable population of prairie chickens in southern Iowa in one of our, you know, best grassland landscapes, both in southern Iowa and northern Missouri, kind of Ringgold County, and then down to the south in Missouri. So we do a lot of monitoring of the species as well as a lot of appreciation for the species by hosting our Prairie Chicken Day, which has been canceled the last couple years because of the pandemic, but we are starting it back up again this year on April 9th.
April 9th, so Saturday morning, right at sunrise.
Sunrise is like 6:50, yeah.
6:50, so right around 6:30. So what can people anticipate if they arrive at 6:30?
So hopefully, if the weather cooperates and it's not too windy, it'll still be relatively dark and you won't be able to see the chickens at first. But if we're lucky, hopefully we'll be able to hear them. Their calls carry quite a ways as long as the wind is in the right direction, and they make all sorts of crazy noises. So it's kind of fun to hear them. They not only do the iconic booming, which kind of is often described as like blowing across a bottle, the entrance of a bottle, kind of
bloom,
that
bloom, bloom,
eerie, yeah, sound, but they also make whoops and cackles and, you know, all sorts of crazy noises while they're displaying. So that's kind of fun. And then as the sun rises, or, you know, the horizon lightens, you can start seeing the birds using binoculars or a spotting scope, which we'll have available from the viewing platform, and kind of see them sparring and doing their thing.
Yeah, and in previous years, the local management team there, they're going to say it's the Grand River Unit?
River Grassland Unit.
River Grasslands, right in the title. Chad Pop, Josh Rush, and they work with the local farmers in that area to promote grasslands, I understand.
Yeah, one of our LEC sites for prairie chickens is on public land, but we have three additional places where we pick up chickens, and those are all on private lands. And that's a testament to the private landowners and cattle producers in that area that have kept the landscape in grass and are welcoming to the birds, and in some cases have made changes like put areas into CRP in order to make a landscape as friendly as possible for these unique birds.
And CRP is the Conservation Reserve Program, where farmers are given the opportunity to seed grasslands and then basically take corn ground out of production for upwards of 15 or 20 years, and really changes the landscape. But why is it that you would have an area, a LEC, that you referred to as a booming ground, and then there would be others pop up in the associated hillsides? Is there a dominance thing going on there with prairie chickens, males?
Yeah, so there's a little bit, there's definitely a lot of competition among the males. I think most research has indicated that only about 10% of the males in the population end up breeding on the LEC sites. So yeah, there's a benefit perhaps for splitting off into additional LECs. It gives other males more opportunity for breeding, the more LEC areas there are. And so a fairly dominant male that can't, you know, get rid of another dominant male at one site might move over and other males join them at a different LEC site in the landscape. But I think, you know, honestly, I think our knowledge about how chickens exactly choose LEC sites or how they do their thing is, it's not set in stone.
Okay.
And we certainly don't know it completely. You know, they occasionally move LEC locations slightly, and even though there doesn't appear to be a change in the landscape, and we don't necessarily understand why they do that. But
they essentially, males are picking out what they prefer, and they start that in like late winter. It's been going on for weeks now. But why is this date becoming so central to their reproduction?
Yeah, so the males start really early and get that drive very early, but I think most of the evidence is that a lot of the breeding doesn't happen until kind of this late March, early April time period. So it's just kind of the peak of activity. Once the hens kind of wander onto the LEC, it brings in perhaps additional males, but also increases the amount of activity on the LEC, and they become more visible and noticeable.
So the hens will quite likely be a part of this scene unfolding Saturday morning.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. So is she looking for that dominant male, or what's her motivation, or what's really, in your estimation, what's really happening out there?
Yeah, so the females, yes, they are judging the males, or they seem to be. They come onto the LEC and kind of hang around the periphery, and as soon as the males see a hen, they adjust their behavior and kind of start displaying and sparring, you know, a lot closer to the female and running at her and eventually, again, she makes a decision about which of the males is, you know, she's the most impressed by and seems like they're the top chicken on the lek and will allow mating to happen.
Be the top chicken on the lek.
Yeah. It's no longer top dog. You want to be the top chicken. Okay. Yeah.
And you had some partners over the years. This has been, let's just kind of rewind here a little bit. Back in the 1980s, there was a conservation biologist in southern Iowa named Mel Moe. And it seems that you might be providing ongoing prairie chicken interest into something that he kind of started back in the 1980s.
Yeah, this mission of trying to bring prairie chickens back to Iowa has involved so many people that have been instrumental in this species and this project. You know, obviously the work done in the 1980s and 1990s, which you were instrumental in, you know, happened before my time, but there was a lot of really important people then that were involved. The Kansas Department of Wildlife, Mel Moe, for sure, down there was a driving force. And then there was a number of staff that helped with trapping. Anybody else that you can think of that was really instrumental back then?
Yeah, Alan Taylor and Harvey Pfluger were on staff there. It was kind of those three guys. And you mentioned the Kansas Department of Fish and Game. They were involved with providing prairie chickens to Iowa. And then as things kind of went along, it looked like there was some genetic work that indicated that maybe an infusion of new genetics would be beneficial to what had been happening there in southern Iowa.
Right.
And that was your role working with Nebraska, I understand.
Yeah, there was some evidence in the literature that low genetic diversity in a prairie chicken population could actually lead to lower productivity or less young prairie chickens being produced in the population. So that's not always the case in other populations. Low genetic diversity can affect other things, but it doesn't always necessarily affect reproduction. But in this case, it seemed like maybe for prairie chickens, it was important. So we talked about bringing in a few new birds and some new genetics to bolster things down there. And so instead of going to Kansas, we approached Nebraska, who was really great to work with. And this was in partnership with the Nature Conservancy, both of Missouri and Iowa. Blank Park Zoo was instrumental in providing funding and support for this, as well as our own staff. And we trapped in two different locations in Nebraska and bought several hundred chickens and released them in southern Iowa and northern Missouri. And I should mention Missouri Department of Conservation was also really involved in that. So there's actually so many partners with this. It's hard to keep them all in mind. So it's definitely been a team effort.
And it's been a keystone species, if you will, but it was primarily the grassland habitat that all
I was just going to say that, you know, we've struggled with establishing a sustainable population of prairie chickens, and, you know, that's discouraging or, not what we wanted. But at the same time, I don't know that it's been a wasted effort by any means, because it has helped spur a lot of conservation work in that area that has created this really amazing grassland landscape that, supports so many grassland species, particularly, you know, all the grassland birds that you can think of. It's a globally important bird area for Henslow sparrow and a lot of other grassland bird species. There's harriers, short-eared owls, upland sandpipers, like everything you can think of that rely on grasslands use this landscape. And the prairie chickens were kind of the focal species that helped that restoration of the landscape happen.
And list a couple butterflies, if you would. We'll kind of wrap this up, Stephanie, but what butterflies should I be looking for Saturday morning at the Kellerton Prairie Chicken Viewing Site?
Yeah, you're probably not going to see too many butterflies on Saturday morning. It's still a little too cold for them. We've had a few pop up here, like some of the overwintering species, like morning cloaks and question marks and stuff like that. And it's supposed to be, I think, in the 20s overnight on Friday. So probably won't see too many butterflies on Saturday. But You know, there are a lot of grassland butterflies that are supported in that area, too. So make a second trip down there in, like, June, and you can see all sorts of cool insects. Because, yeah, it's supporting prairie skinks and lots of other species besides birds as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing you Saturday morning at the viewing site. I'll give people the directions. What is it, about 4 miles east of Mount Air, and then south a mile and a half, but it's there's a sign, Prairie Chicken Viewing Area on Highway 2.
Yeah, and I think it's 300th Avenue. Is the, if you're coming from Mount Air, you pass the unit headquarters, which has a sign, and then it's the very next road.
Very next corner, yeah.
Yeah, you head down about a mile, mile and a half, and you can't miss the viewing platform on the left-hand side.
Yeah, it's a testament to a vision that Mel Moe, Alan Taylor, and Harvey Pfluger. And I look forward to seeing you, Steph. Thanks
yeah,
for
too.
The weather forecast. I am going to stay over this year, and I'll be looking for butterflies in the afternoon. We'll see.
Yeah, it is supposed to get nice later in the day, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
But be bundled up in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see you there.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie Shepherd, biologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Wildlife Diversity Program. And when Stephanie mentioned the Blank Park Zoo, Jessica Lowry and director Kevin Dries of the Blank Park Zoo oversaw a program that directed 25 cents of every admission fee to a project that the people that were contributing the 25 cents determined. And they were faced with donating to an elephant cause in Africa or tigers in Thailand. But the people chose the prairie chickens in Iowa. And that was the money devoted to bringing prairie chickens to Iowa from about 2010 to 2013. And that was such a unique opportunity of funding and support. Because the Wildlife Diversity Program kind of needs to earmark their projects in that way. But there is, being since tax time, Stephanie would want me to remind you that since prairie chickens and other birds are not supported with direct licensing funding, you know, there's no seasons, so no hunting dollars go there, the Wildlife Diversity Program relies upon chickadee checkoff funding. I think it's line 57 on your state income tax form. And Mike Metz, I bet you're a chickadee checkoff.
Ever since it started, Pat, that's a great way to contribute. It's already funds that you don't see anyway, so go ahead and give it to the program, and usually a little more would really help.
Always, that's the lifeblood of
that's
the
right.
funding for the Wildlife Diversity Program. But thank you, Stephanie. It is 7:29 on your Friday, and you're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and I'm your host for the hour, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director with the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Welcome, Mary.
Hello, Pat. Always a pleasure to join you on a lovely Earth Month Friday.
Oh, Earth Month. I love it. Yeah, let's talk about April 23rd, but if we can weave in a little bit of Earth Day in the airwaves, 365 days out of the year, why not? But an Earth Month, yeah, because it's like Iowa's waking up.
It's so true, Pat. It is so exciting to walk around outside. Granted, we had a little snow, a little teaser from Mother Nature yesterday. But, oh my goodness, the trees are budding out. Flowers are popping through the ground. We're seeing new birds. We're hearing new songs. It's a lovely time to be outside and be enjoying our lovely planet.
And you work with a lot of students as in a kind of a team effort. But I bet
I do indeed.
And they're plenty busy this time of year.
Pat, that is exactly correct. We are busy with a number of things. In fact, I was hoping on in having a couple of them join me this morning, but they are so very busy, not only with things related to our team and Earth Month, but there's just a lot to tie up before the end of the semester. Yeah. But I wanted to specifically highlight something that the team has been working very diligently on, specifically to celebrate Earth Month. And that is that every year we put together a very extensive Earth Month calendar of events. And we really look at any event happening in Story County, on campus, in and around our surrounding communities even, that really celebrates sustainability and Earth Month, but looks at sustainability events being environmental, economic, or social, which we've talked about the three facets of sustainability. And so we put together this calendar. It's online, and it has all of these events collected in one spot. We designate what facet of sustainability that they support. We provide a description, provide you the information on where and how and what time, and also provide a hyperlink for more information. Right now, if you scroll through all these events on this online calendar, we have over 50 pages of events happening in and around during the month of April. We do make it very easy, though, to search through by date to find something that might be of interest to you. But let me just, I was going to tell you, Pat, just to give an idea of sort of the diversity of the type of events that we have on this calendar. We also have, as well as particular events happening on a certain day, we also have opportunities to give back. And so we have a number of volunteer opportunities that are also listed within this calendar. Everything from adopting a particular area in the community or on campus in order to keep clean and litter free, to also looking at different opportunities with organizations that might have extra needs, whether it be related to literacy or related to assisting animals. Breadth and depth of different opportunities there. A number of art exhibits are happening throughout the community, at the Octagon, also Brunier Galleries. We have a number of performances taking place in the theater at Iowa State, Story Theater, actors. I just went to a wonderful production last weekend, so I really encourage people to take a look at that. A number of speakers that are going to be on campus and throughout the community. Also, so many wonderful classes. Ryman Gardens has wonderful classes related to getting outside, planting, interacting with nature throughout the entire month. So I would really encourage folks to look at that. Of course, we have a number of different fun classes in the community, whether it be related to exercise or cooking as well. So those are included on the calendar. It's also fun to look at different get outside and be a part of interacting with nature through events, through fun runs, through bike rides. A number of those are also included. So that just gives an idea of really the breadth and depth and unique diversity of ways to get out, enjoy the planet. And in many cases, these events also give back through philanthropy to very important and near and dear to us causes within our community as well.
And you mentioned a website. Let's list it here, and then I'll try to remember it at the end. For sure, it'll be in the synopsis for
the archive. Absolutely. So if folks just go to livegreen.org, www.iastate.edu. On the front of our main landing page, we have a big slider that says Earth Month Calendar. Okay. And you can click on a button there that says View Calendar, and it takes you to the calendar and all those many events and opportunities happening during Earth Month.
Hey, tell me a little bit more about the production that you went to last weekend.
It was wonderful. We went to see Double Wide Texas at Actors. And of course, we're using, you know, our local talent and local expertise, and saw so many. It was so lovely to gather and see so many people that we know from our community again. But it was just a very lively, fun, creative production. They also have one left coming up in May, actually. I imagine somebody from Actors may talk about that, but they're going to do the musical Legally Blonde. So while we have wonderful performances that come to us through Stevens Auditorium and a number of different places like that, it's always fun to enjoy that local talent as well. I would mention that actually at Fisher Theater right now, they are doing a production called Baba, and it's sort of about this mystical creature that is coming and kind of threatening a young woman's environmental experience, so to speak. And so this has been all put together by students. One of my students was not able to join me because she was a part of the production until about 11 o'clock last night. So I'll give a little shout out for that production.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I love keeping up with these. And the Actors, is that still in West Ames?
It is, Pat. They just did a great renovation to their facility. So it is right around South Dakota. Yes, exactly.
And then Lincoln Swing in South Dakota, you'll find the Actors. Yeah, what a destination. And they're probably just kind of amping back up from the pandemic situation. So I love it. I love what they do over there at the Actors. And Ryman Gardens, anything more about, is there any, we're going to have Stash the Trash, I guess that's later on. Is that in May or June?
It is actually on the weekend of April 29th, 30th, into May 1st. Yes. And so we're doing, I'm glad you brought up Stash the Trash, because it's being done a little more in a self-direct fashion this year. So we are offering at the Resource Recovery Center, we will have gloves and bags for folks to pick up at any time during April. We're looking at having those out and available next week. And so, and then over the weekend, April 29th, 30th, and May 1st, we will have a roll-off for people to bring their trash and deposit any trash they may collect at Ryman Gardens. And so, yeah, we've tried to make it, understanding that April's so busy, we've tried to make it something that individuals, when they have the moments, can go out to their favorite outdoor space, even if it's in within your own neighborhood, and do some cleanup. And make a difference that way as it works with your schedule.
What a wonderful option that people will have to get in that spring cleaning mode. And I can see how those encouragement by having the gloves and, you know, everything you're going to need other than a little bit of your time. And it feels good. Space is good. Clean out the garage. Move things along.
Absolutely. Obviously, we'll be talking about this at a later date, but it's not too soon as people are doing their spring cleaning to make your rummage rampage pile in your home and getting it ready for that event coming up as well.
Rummage rampage in July.
Yes. Start planning now. And of course, Pat, I would mention a couple of other unique opportunities as we're looking at cleaning up. We have a student group on campus this weekend that is offering lawnmower tune-ups on campus. So you can bring your lawnmower over to the Sukup building 1 to 6 p.m. today or 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. tomorrow. There's also information on our Earth Month calendar about this, but that helps you with your yard work. And then as you collect all your yard work, of course, the city is having some free yard waste days coming up this month as well, which is also on our calendar.
In the Sukup building, where is that located?
Over by the College of Design, actually.
Okay.
Yes.
A new building over there. Okay, the Sukup. So that's kind of northwest corner of campus.
Correct, yes.
Well, that's, you're making it so accommodating to give Ames a little brush up for the season, if you will. Time to kind of move some of the detritus of winter aside and bring out a new season. It's what we do in
excited.
Iowa.
Excited. Yes, absolutely.
And is there other things of that? Maybe we should, let's put in a plug for our Earth Day on the airwaves, April 23rd.
I would love to do that, Pat. Yes. So on Earth Day, we will be celebrating Earth Day on campus. And then the very next day, we are going to be celebrating on the airwaves. As you mentioned, we started this, Pat, I think this is our third year. Mm-hmm. We started it when we couldn't gather for Earth Month and Earth Day celebrations with the pandemic. And it was a wonderful visionary consideration from KHOI, then the city, and then my office got involved. In going out and collecting voices across our community about the earth, about the importance of the earth, about different ways people are making a difference and committing their enthusiasm and their dedication and creativity to protecting our planet and ensuring that sustainable future. So this year's event is on the 23rd. It will be aired on the 23rd. But of course, as you well know, we are busy working on gathering those interviews right now. Mm-hmm. And excited to have that event from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Yeah. Will be broadcast.
Excited and humbled to a certain extent. You have so many rich and rare contacts through Iowa State University. I mean, we get world-class presenters going over some of their research. It just kind of runs the gamut from how to plant a prairie to what it means to have bees. What to do about cardboard? And I learned so much from the last 2 years of the Earth Day appreciation. And so now Earth Day on the airwaves, I guess we're going to honor those airwaves. I'm glad you've got something planned for April 22nd. That's the typical day of on Friday. We'll take some of the weekend and give our listeners a little bit of variety, if you will, from our regular programming. We're starting to put together the recordings. There'll be a lot of live things too. There's going to be a lot of live segments, I understand, out at the water treatment facility.
Yes, actually, on this very same day, we will have an in-person opportunity through the City of Ames. We're opening up facilities again to be able to invite the public, and there will be an open house at the water treatment facility that is actually out on 13th Street. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be so many opportunities, and if folks look at the Earth Month calendar, so many opportunities to go here for a little bit, go over here for a little bit, have lunch and listen to the radio for a little bit. It's just such a bursting month of activity and an opportunity. And it's a great time to be a member of our community and to be a member of our planet as well.
Well, Mary Rankin, you certainly capture all the excitement and vibrancy of what it means to be an Iowan and a citizen of Ames. And what a great segment. Is there anything else? Are we overlooking anything, Mike Metz?
No, I think we're planning. We're anxious and excited to help.
Yeah, and we'll be posting all the different activities. Mike was bringing up things that the County Conservation Board will be doing out at McFarland also. So, yeah, we'll just have the array for people's enjoyment and to plug in. And also, you know, one thing I'm looking forward to is getting down to the 13th Street River access. That was such a wonderful dedication last year in the summer, but it was so dry. But now the river is really brimming with good cheer, and I think that's going to be one of my traditions heading to the station that day, is spend some time on that Skunk River and enjoy what visionaries have created by taking out that Lowhead Dam and turning it into a water park festival area.
Yeah, I think, Pat, you make such an important point, is the important message I hope that everyone gets from our discussion today is to find your celebration and find what resonates with you and go experience it. And Mike, I want to assure you, we have all sorts of Story County Conservation's events on our calendar as well. So there's something for everyone.
Find your celebration. Thank you, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Wonderful to join us on this Friday. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Always a pleasure.
Well, the Story County Board of Supervisors is on record with the Iowa Utilities Board asking them to not allow the use of eminent domain for carbon pipelines. In visiting with Linda Merkin yesterday, she stated, "I believe we were the third county to notify the IUB, that's the Iowa Utilities Board, of our opposition to them granting eminent domain for this purpose, for a carbon CO2 pipeline. Since then, numerous county boards of supervisors have filed similar statements of opposition, and I do not have an exact count, but believe the vast majority of counties through which one or both pipeline routes run have filed objections." And on Tuesday, March 29th, at a public hearing, well, not a hearing, it was a meeting. They didn't have public hearings for this, but there was a public meeting down at the Capitol concerning eminent domain and pipelines across Iowa.
I'm Tom Honeyman from Mills in Montgomery, Iowa. That's way down in the southwest corner. And I'm representing Hinton Creek Stock Farm, Incorporated, which is an Iowa family farm that's been incorporated since 1960. I'm the fourth generation. My son, who just returned, who is active duty Navy, is the fifth. I have the authority through the officers and shareholders to declare my objection to the carbon cement pipeline that will affect the corporation's land about a mile and a half east of Emerson in Montgomery County, Section 19, Garfield Township. I am strongly opposed to any private company, and as you know, this is a private company, well-connected company that seeks eminent domain ruling at the local, county, or state level. This pipeline will not solve any CO2 problems. There has been no research that this is a scientific solution to what's going on with the CO2. The more people we have on the planet, the more CO2 we're going to produce. The wildfires in the West produce billions more CO2 than this does. The whole European continent burns wood and coal, they produce CO2. It will not raise the price of corn. It will not save the ethanol industry, as my neighbor already quoted. She stole that from me. The ethanol industry lives on its own, and the ones that are responsible solve their own CO2 problems. The one in Mills County on Interstate 29 is a huge ethanol plant. They sell their collected CO2 to Air Products, which redistribute it to carbonated water. They redistribute it to any different, they told Summit they did not want them on their property. This maneuver to acquire eminent domain basically is theft. If I were to rent land or oblige an easement on the property that I am the CEO of, I would expect to be paid annual rent or damages. I don't know any of you fellow farmers that expect your farm or your neighbor's farm without paying rent for the use of it. I would also expect that the warranty deed for this property holds some legal value, as it has for the last 154 years on our property. to state that the corporation's board of directors has the right to decide the future and well-being of the property, not the state utility board. If you look above me, and it's been a while since I've been in the Capitol, on the door above the clock, it states, where law ends, tyranny begins. Ladies and gentlemen, this is tyrannous. This is sheer tyranny. The number one reason your great-grandfathers, who were immigrants, came to this country was for freedom, but it was also to own their own property, of which they took care of all these years, of which they were solely responsible for. High prices, low prices, floods, earthquakes, they were still responsible for it. And they paid property taxes to municipal entities, government entities that think up all kinds of things to spend money on. They support their schools, they support locally and statewide. They always pay the property tax. My second objection is a distraction, unprofessional, disorganized, false information, lack of information type of project this has become. From the start, I, as a landowner, have never been able to contact or find anyone that absolutely knows where they want to build the pipeline on the property. Nor can I find out a list of landowners that are my neighbors, even in my township, that are affected by the pipeline. Personally, I can't believe pumping CO2 into North Dakota is a solution to any problem. I'm afraid it will only increase the income of the investors. This in no way is a public safety or beneficial project for Montgomery County or the state of Iowa. Thirdly, it wastes good time. I don't like to waste anything, but as you grow older, and I am older, time is valuable. I resent non-farm people who are not aware of the situation or the conditions they propose to think I'm some cockamamie scheme that takes my time away from my work and causes me to hire expensive lawyers to protect the rights that I should already have under the state of Iowa. I urge you as legislators, if you follow your constituency, I know you realize the one-year moratorium will do nothing more than get you past midterm elections. You will be forced to say yay or nay to strongly oppose this offensive pipeline scheme, regardless of the political pressure you're in. I state again my opposition to any CO2 pipeline proposal in Montgomery County, and I want eminent domain to return to what it was originally designed for. Thank you.
My name is Julie Johnson, and Navigator wants to put their hazardous carbon dioxide pipeline through our farm in Pocahontas County. Not only do they want to put it through, they want to put it through diagonally across some of the best farmland in the nation. I have attended 3 Navigator meetings and 1 summit meeting. All of you who are here expecting to get pipeline jobs out of this, let me tell you something. At one of the meetings with Navigator, I asked them, where is the labor for the pipeline going to come from? And they said, we have to have specialized people do this, who know how to work on these pipelines. They will come from Texas. At another meeting, it was the online meeting, there were people there from Indiana, and they said, we are really looking forward to coming to Iowa to build these pipelines. So those of you who expect to get local pipeline jobs, you better speak to your union reps, because they've been lying to you. One other thing I just want to stress is that there is nothing more local labor than those of us who farm the land. We are the ones who put our hands into the dirt and get dirt under our fingernails. We are the ones, or in my generation, used to pull cobwebs. We are the ones who bale hay and take care of that land as if it was part of our family, because it is. And this violation of the hazardous carbon dioxide pipelines is unforgivable. Thank you.
Why did we drive 2 to 4 hours one way today for a meeting here? Why are we writing objection letters and filing them with the IUB? Why are we worried sick and not sleeping at night or losing sleep? And why are we fighting for our land? You can't understand unless you've watched the sunrise and milk cows a few minutes later. You can't understand unless you've awakened to the fresh, cool air in the morning and listened to the birds fighting over their breakfast. You cannot understand unless you've had grandma's cinnamon rolls and coffee for a morning break, or her black walnut cookies and a cup of coffee for afternoon break. You can't understand unless you've laid in the bed with windows open and feel the quiet while listening to the crickets and the morning doves coo. You can't understand unless you've awakened one of those mornings and know it's going to get hot and humid before noon and probably storm before the day's over. You can't understand unless you've chased fireflies and caught them and then fall asleep watching them flicker in your room. You can't understand unless you've let that rich black soil run through your fingers and know every corner, every terrace, and are aware of every soil condition in those fields. You can't understand unless you've watched the rising sun melt the fog away in the valley and see your livestock grazing peacefully down there. You can't understand unless you've planted corner beans in the spring and watched those little plants emerge in straight rows with hopes and prayers of beneficial rains and decent weather. You can't understand unless you smelled fresh mown hay and it brings back a flood of memories. You cannot understand unless you've walked beans with a corn knife and cut weeds for 25 cents an hour. You can't understand unless you've named all your hens and gathered eggs while avoiding that little mean banty rooster. You can't understand unless you've bottle-fed pigs, baby pigs in your basement, because the mama died during birth or she couldn't take care of all of them. You can't understand unless you've carefully moved 30 bales of hay to find those baby kittens that you hear in the barn loft. You can't understand unless you've watched the rows of corn roll like ocean waves in the wind. I've got a lot of them, but let me go with a couple of the last ones here. You can't understand unless you breathe deeply after a much-needed rain and can smell the earth come alive. You can't understand unless you've spent 24 hours straight in a combine or eating supper under the wagon waiting for the next load to come by. You can't understand when you've stood by your dad's side after a hailstorm and watched the tears run down his face because there was no crop insurance at that time. This was all before crop insurance. You can't understand unless you've heard the stories about the Depression, the wars, the dry years, the floods, and how they made it through all of them because they believed in God, the land, and themselves. You can't and never will understand unless you've been there, unless you've walked a mile in those work boots. Then, and only then, will you know why and understand why we're here today. It is the land, and it is a way of life. Thank you.
You've been listening to Iowans Across This Great State testify at the public meeting at the Iowa State Capitol on Tuesday, March 29th. 2022. That was Tom Honeyman, Mills County, Julie Johnson, Pocahontas County, and Cindy Hansen, sister from Shelby County. Thank you, folks. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guests, Stephanie Shepherd, Mary Rankin, and all the folks testifying about eminent domain at the Capitol. And thank you, Mike Metz. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Carlos Nakai playing Catfish Muse. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And Adagio at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.